Craig Keith, this meeting's all yours.
All right, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Before I turn it over to Tyrell for roll call, just a couple housekeeping notes. If you're not speaking, to mute your phone, it's *6. That way there any background noise, if you're walking throughout your house or whatever, you don't have to hear that. So, and to unmute and to speak is *6. So if everyone could do that, if you're not speaking, but after roll call. And then reminder, this is a quarterly operators meeting, so all operators are obviously welcome to attend, but it's also a committee meeting, so only those committee members are able to vote and speak on topics until open forum at the end of the meeting. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tyrell for a roll call.
All right, sounds good. Start. So for roll call, do I have Chairman Keith Haley on the line?
Here.
Vice Chair Chad Barr?
Here.
Amos Katorma? Shelby McDermott? Carmela Ferreira?
Here.
Stephen Hillier? David Pelagi?
Here.
Alternate Tony Ford?
I'm here.
Alternate Angel Torres?
I'm here.
In the administration? Director Brian Sigmund?
Present.
Myself, Admiral Sampson, DEP supervisor. And recording the minutes, we have Brenda Lamar and Lisa Tangler. Is that correct?
Yes.
Present. Okay. Is there anyone on the call who might be not named?
I missed you, Shelley. Just got here.
Anyone else?
Yes,
Mr. Carlos is here.
I'm sorry, who just said something?
Yeah, two people just said at the same time they're here. So could you each go separately?
Jesse Soul.
Okay. So Frank Roberts?
Anyone else?
Nick Fair.
Brandy
all set. We all forgot. And then somebody right after Brandy spoke.
Nick Fair. No. Okay. We can proceed. All right, next item on the agenda. Chairman, do you have anything that you want to say before we move along?
I do not. You can proceed.
Okay. So we have the approval of the minutes of December 4th, 2020, and January
19th, 2021. Yes, those minutes were distributed to the committee members. We read them. If I can get a motion from the floor to accept the minutes of those two meetings. Any committee member?
I make a motion we accept the minutes.
Who's
that?
David Pelagi.
All right. Can I get a second?
My second motion
is Chad.
Who's that?
Chad. That was Chad. So I have a motion being seconded to accept the meeting, the minutes of the two previous meetings. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Any abstentions? The motion carries.
Okay, we can go into old business. So for budget update, what I have, program budget balance remains over $1 million, which is actually, you know, good. Certainly we have to consider the fact that majority of our locations are not operating, in addition to the monthly deposits that we're receiving are typically less than what we've averaged prior to COVID. I would say that we're in decent shape. I'm not going to say great shape, but we're definitely good. Anytime I see that the budget remains over $1 million, that's comfortable. So that's good. Another bonus for the budget is that the monthly revenue generated from the commission it's starting to pick up. So the past previous 2 months, we've had budget, commissions of $37,000 roughly. January's commission was $41,000. So that's good. You know, I think if we can keep trending upwards, we'll definitely, see some positive light with the budget and as the vaccines are starting to roll out, that's also a benefit, hopefully getting the state back in, on its feet and moving forward. So I would say that's definitely good news in that aspect of the budget. So nothing concerning, and you know, certainly we're still watching our costs. I'm still not looking to get any clerical support at this time to kind of, you know, keep the budget intact until we really feel as though we need it, and then maybe we'll have to assess that need. But all in all, we're good. If no one has any questions in regards to the budget, we can move on to the regulations update provided by the subcommittee. We're making some good headway in the regulation assessment progress board. We should have a draft to submit here by the end of the month. We're making some good headway. We're over halfway done with the alterations to the regulations. Any changes?
Sorry, gentlemen, I just came in.
Is that Amy Demo?
Yep.
So this is Brandy. I'm on the news pad for the regulations.
Yeah.
And we've been working on it, and we've actually come to a regulation that we want to possibly make some adjustments on, but we feel it's not a choice that the three of us should make solely. It's something that we feel that either the committee should vote on or the entire the board should vote on whether to do. And it's in regards to a section in regards to the board itself. So give me a second here, I'll pull up the regulation and read what it says now and how we'd like to change it, and then see how you guys would like to proceed with either just the main committee voting or everybody voting on the change, because it does affect everybody. Give me one second, I'm sorry. Sorry, my phone glitched and I lost the spot, so I'm sorry, take me a minute to find it again. Apologize for the delay, guys. Need more care. I'll give you the gist of it while I locate the exact thing. The gist is that right now, the way the wording is, we have to change the wording because if one year is saying we elect 7 members, and that's the same as 9. Right now, what we do is every year we hold an election. And you can only serve on the board as of right now for 2 consecutive years, then you have to take the year off, and then you can be voted back on, except for in certain circumstances. But generally, that's the way that it goes. Me, Chad, and Frank were discussing it, and as well as with Terry and many other NASA members who don't have their system like this, where you are forced to take time off. What we are proposing and would like to possibly change, again, with everybody approval, is making it that you don't have to take the year off, so you would be able to do as many years as you're voted on to and want to be on the board. But there would be no, break year. So you could be elected for as many terms consecutively as you would like. I know that this was put in place to kind of make sure that different people got to have input and opinions and stuff like that. You're not always hearing from the same people, but I think that we can recognize that that is unfortunately the way that we operate right now. We do kind of only hear from the same regular people, and we kind of push people into positions that they don't necessarily always want. And I feel like we push people out of positions that they do want and are making, like, it's great you get to be in for 2 years, you're in 2 years, you're finally, you know, start to know what's going on, you're into it, and then now you have to take a year off, where you're completely on the, you're on the outside, you don't know what's going on, but you want to be on the inside. Meanwhile, other people are being forced to step up, who didn't necessarily want to step up, but who are doing great jobs, you know what I'm saying, but who don't, who are like, well, I'm really busy with my site, I'm really busy with this, I wish somebody else would step up. So we would like to make it so that everybody has the opportunity every year to be on the board, that you don't have to, again, take a year off. I don't know how everybody feels about that.
Yeah, I want to be sure we can check the federal regulations to just look at what the wording is in the federal regulations. Obviously, I don't have them in front of me, but I can certainly research that, and whatever I find on membership, I can share with the committee.
I can tell you that we have done some research on that, and the federal regulations, as is actually Terry from the NASA Federation, who looked over our regulations, who made this suggestion to us to allow you not to have to take, there's nothing in the federal regulations that says you have to take a year off. It's something that we in Connecticut decided was what we would like to do, and again, we're just thinking we would kind of like to change that if everybody else would like to change that.
Yeah, like I said to you, Brandy, I think that the theory was, you already said it, but just to confirm it with everyone else, and just so you know, it's every 4 years, so you can be elected to a two-year term, you can be re-elected for a second two-year term, so it'll be actually off your fourth year, you'd have to take that fourth year off, and I think they did that just like you just said, to get other people involved, but at the same time, you know, we don't have 50, I don't know how many operators we had at the height of this, but we don't have that many operators, we don't have as many willing people to step up onto the committee. So I see what you're saying, and you're forcing, you know, strong people on the same year to take that year off, and it makes it harder on the committee. So it's not a bad thought. Second, and you guys may have seen this, that's similar to Brian, I don't have it in front of me, but the process for this, but you guys are going to come up with a draft, whether it's by the end of the month or the next month, whichever. But then, Brian, does it go to the committee first, or do we send it off? I know this isn't just a committee vote, and that changes the rules. It's a lengthy process, I thought.
Yeah, the Rehab Services Administration has to approve any changes to the regulation. But in Connecticut, there's also a regulation review committee that has to approve the regulation before they would be changed. So what we would do as an agency is, once you have approved your draft regulation, I should be putting it forward to Andrew Norton, and then, you know, it would take an internal review process, but recognizing that once it goes through that internal review process, we would reach out to Rehab Services Administration and say, we recognize that you have to, you know, review these and approve these, but they also need to be approved by the legislature. That has a committee specifically charged with approving regulation, so I need to know what RSA's preference is in terms of, do they want to see it first? Because, again, in Connecticut, because this committee has the authority to approve state regulations, I'm not 100% certain how Rehab Services Administration would want to proceed in that scenario. But there are, you are correct, Mr. Chairman, there are several steps involved before they be approved. But it would start with the committee approving what you want the committee to put forward.
Yeah, so Brandy, to kind of, not necessarily answer your question, but you asked if it should be a subcommittee vote or a total committee vote. Once you guys have those regulations, I would forward them somehow to the rest of the committee for us to review, and then maybe at our next committee meeting, we can, as a committee, vote, you know, whether we, you know, to agree to move them on to the next process. That way, that'll work the entire committee in agreement with what all the work you guys have done. That would be my recommendation.
Okay, I did misspeak. I did mean to say two consecutive terms, not two consecutive years. My apologies. The only thing with what you said is, in regards to the other things, they were just basic changes, like changing the agency's name,
right,
a few other things. This particular item, we felt like we the three of us had one opinion, and we didn't feel like it was, we didn't want to put our opinion forth on this particular thing. The other things, I think, were general things that we kind of all had agreed about over the years, and again, just mostly blamical things more than anything, not really making, this is the biggest change that we're looking to make, so we wanted your guys' opinion and vote, perhaps, on how we should present it to the rest of the committee. The other 28 members of the board. I don't know what's the proper name for each thing, but I think you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't want me to ask Frank to say, hey, this is what we want to change, and then they look at it and go, hold on, well, I like this other stuff, but we don't really like this. This is a big thing. Why did we get, I feel like it's a bigger matter than the other things.
Oh, I understand. That's why when you guys are finished, you can bring it to the entire committee for those deliberations. It doesn't necessarily have to be a quarterly meeting. You could have our own meeting, before we say, okay, now we've all agreed, let's move this forward. But if you're looking for some guidance today, I could certainly, ask the rest of the committee what their feelings are as far as not having to take the year off. Again, this was just our opinion at the time. We still have to do the whole document before it goes forward, once we send it into whether it's Brian. But if you're just looking for some guidance, whether we like this particular change, I see where you're going with it. And I used to like the idea that it gets other people involved, but seeing that sometimes people don't step up, maybe it's time to change that rule. So I would be in favor of it. I don't know if there's any other committee members that have a thought for or against while we're on the topic.
I'd be in favor of it, Carmella.
Yeah.
No, sure.
Anyone else? And bring you up. I'm not even going to take a vote if there's anyone that's strongly against it. I mean, that's fine, but at least it gives you guys some direction to leave it in there until
we read
the entire document. Yeah. So we don't really need to take a vote to you guys are still working on your end of it, so depending, there'll be strong feelings against how it moves forward with the way you have it written or how you're going to write it. And then again, once you guys are finished, we'll present it somehow to the rest of the committee before we send it into whether it's Brian or Tyrell or whoever it goes to next.
Okay, that sounds good to me, and I think that answers what we were looking for. I mean, as long as Frank and Chad don't have anything to add today, that what we're looking for is more than just our opinions, to make sure that it would be something that would be on board before we submitted it and caused a big issue. So, thank you.
No, good work, you guys. This has been we've been talking about doing these regulations for years. It's not an easy thing. Some of it's clerical, like you said, just changing the name, from the board to whatever it's changed to. But then there's, along the line, sometimes you come up some bigger issues. So, thanks for finally tackling this, because it's going to be a while before anything gets approved anyhow, but at least we have the ball rolling, so good work.
All right. We can move along. The next topic, pending contract, Pepsi transition update. As of today, I'd say 95%, maybe 97% of the vending machines have been installed, which is a plus. We are working with Pepsi, and Tracy's working hard on getting installed in some of the schools. But outside of that, most of the state buildings and municipal properties and public properties have machines placed. And I think that we can kind of tell based off of the slow rise in revenue coming in. So that's a plus. Tracy and myself continue to work with Pepsi weekly. We were on conference calls weekly with them, sometimes twice a week, depending on the situation. But all in all, we're still happy. We're still satisfied. They're working around the clock. We've actually now had an official, I guess we want to call him an account manager, that's overseeing the BESBE contract. And his name is Michael Kaiser. He's the boots on the ground salesman. And he also does a ton of things behind the scenes as well. But Mike has been great working with Mike on a few things most recently. And he's very passionate. He's just good. He really will Center, which sometimes surprises me because it's just really that ball of knowledge in all facets of the Pepsi contract. But he'll get you the answer right away. Mike did state that he will start to contact some of the over-the-counter operations, in specific probably the seasonal locations in the near future, to discuss their offerings and opportunities of business. I think what we do know is obviously you guys have the option to go with Coke or Pepsi, at your over-the-counter sales. Ideally, it would be nice to, kind of give Pepsi the business if they are, I would say equally competitive in whatever you're looking for. Something that I'm not looking at, obviously. But with steps, I would say that for those that have the over-the-counter facilities, do your homework, and obviously select what option you feel brings you the most value. Certainly during this time, I understand that the profit is key, and a lot of you all have took a big loss in the past, so I understand. But also, I would just say keep in back in mind that if we could potentially keep everything across the board Pepsi, I think it would just be, I would say maybe just good business partnership. But you all have your own specific opportunities. But I would say please look out for a call from Michael Kaiser, and he will certainly provide additional information as to what he can provide from Pepsi's end.
Tyrell, quick question.
The
previous guy, I'm going to make up his name, Corey Daly or something.
Mm-hmm.
Is he still with Pepsi?
He is still with Pepsi, but he's transitioned out of the, his name is Colin. He transitioned out of that particular position, and he's more behind the scenes. When I tell you, there's literally like six people working on this contract, or I should say working for this contract. And they all range in their profession and in their position. But Mike is really like the front liner. He's the one that's providing all of the weekly updates, what machines, have been repaired, what machines have been filled, what machines, may need to be replaced, so forth. Tracy's really on top of them and making sure that no ball is dropped. And as they would say, we're making sure that we're fishing where the fish are. So ultimately, with that statement, we want to make sure we're not missing a dollar. And everybody understands it. And I think the thing that we both obviously are in agreement of is just the simple fact that it's beneficial for both sides to ensure that we're maximizing our profitability with, positioning ourselves properly in locations that will give us the biggest return. So, obviously, we've had a very slow start into this contract. This is no secret, and obviously shouldn't come as no shock that, our contract and our yearly bonuses are predicated on our sales. Well, we can already assume that we will certainly have a major prorated deduction on this upcoming annual sponsorship bonus payment. So, certainly we're all trying to do what we can to maximize the monthly sales, and I think we're doing the job for what it is.
Well, Tyrell, hi, this is Shelley. Question, so if Colin is no longer a point person for orders and things like that, I heard you mention the new gentleman. Was that information dispatched to everybody or not as of yet?
Not yet, and that's, Michael will reach out to each of one of you and introduce himself for him and be able to provide you with any information that he has and answer any questions that you have.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, no problem. If no further questions in regards to the vending contract, we can move right along to the new business, which is New Haven Train Station. So, initially I was hoping that I was going to provide you all with, a lot of information for this potential opportunity, but unfortunately I don't have that at this time. But what we do have is DOT reached out to us end of January in regards to notifying us that DOT is in the process of negotiating a new contract related to the management at the Union Station. This contract between DOT and that management company is in the duration of, I believe, 35 years. Okay, so they reached out because part of that contract has to do with the concession opportunity or concession operations in that particular contract. What I do know now, and trust me when I tell you everything that I'm going to tell you, it's all I know at the moment, is there's two commercial businesses, food businesses, and I believe it's a Dunkin' Donuts and a Sbarro. I did immediately reach back out to the lady Amy over at DOT and try to see if I can gather any financial information pertaining to those two businesses. As we do know, and I think a lot of us have been on calls where we've heard operators in other states are operating commercialized businesses. Well, there's no question that we need to, at this time, try to exercise any of our potential opportunities out there. So, you know, certainly before I present anything to the committee and you guys make a determination of anything that's presented to you, we got to really be sure that it's not within our scope and that it's not a viable business opportunity. So with that being said, I did reach back out to see if there was any financial information pertaining to those two concepts and businesses. Unfortunately, there isn't because they paid a lease. Therefore, they're not obligated to provide that information. Nothing was predicated off of their profitability. So it didn't warrant that that request of that information to be submitted to them. However, once receiving that information, I did reach back out to see if there was an RFP available, in which they do not have one at this time, but as soon as they are able to provide, they will. I think the important piece for me, and not just, you know, quickly mentally dismissing this, is because they did make mention that there is going to be an additional piece of property built. I don't know if it's across the street or on the premise. It's going to be newly developed property. And so what I wanted to see is, well, what are they looking to have in on that newly developed property? You know, is it market space? Is it just, I don't know, you know, I don't know, you know. And so I want to be able to really assess what's going to be placed there to see if there is a potential opportunity. What we do know right now, we are getting the commissions from the New Haven train station, so obviously that's a bonus in itself. So we are getting money from there, but, you know, you never know. There may potentially be a viable business opportunity down the line, but as of right now, that's all I have. I have nothing else, and I am awaiting additional information from Amy once it's available. But they initiated to reach out, so certainly that alone is enough to give them the respect. Obviously the requirements of business, time that you need to be open, and so forth. So we really have to dive down. But, you know, you just never know. I think for me, I just want to say we really, you know, assess every potential opportunity. Because what we do know is once you waive something, we're waiving it for years, right? So the time is now to really, you know, try to make some moves that you can.
Mr. Chairman, is it all right if I speak on this real quick?
Sure.
I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Tyrell, but I believe this was one of the four possible locations that I had mentioned at the annual meeting that I thought was a possible, looking through the unassigned vending income, I thought this would be a possibility. So could you just kind of, if you could pull them up, possibly kind of share the information on, you know, just to show how viable it could be based on the vending. That's usually
the vending machine?
Yeah.
It's self-emulated? Okay, well, we're currently receiving the commissions from them.
Yeah,
so
but
I don't have that in front of me at the moment, of course.
Okay. Okay.
I would say that if we're receiving those commissions and we would look to then, you know, take over a facility, I would say maybe negotiating, it would have to, I don't know if we would lose our vending rights or if we would also retain those while, you know, in addition, but those commissions, if we retained them, would go to the operator at that location.
Right.
I mean, that's how we've operated in all locations, so it would just ultimately be of greater benefit to the operators that potentially would be operating in that location. But I do have the numbers, and I can simply share them offline.
My ultimate goal by bringing that up was to find more operators' jobs, because obviously we're going to struggle coming out of this pandemic, but that's all I ever wanted to say on the subject.
Yep, no, absolutely.
Brian, yeah, Tyrell and I had that same conversation, and, you know, we're looking for what will be a viable location once COVID is hopefully behind us. And certainly a train station does strike us as one of those kinds of locations that probably has a customer base, even though it's been impacted because of the reduced travel that people are doing. At least it's remained open. But we are also aware that we have another train station further down the track that financially has done very, very poorly. And we want to be sure that, you know, with the absence of any financial information thus far, it's kind of difficult for Tyrell and his staff to come up with any kind of an estimate in terms of what an operator could potentially make at that location. I do believe the vending machines would have to be included. I don't believe that if we take the location that they could separate out the vending machines. I believe we would still retain our right to those vending machines, and as Tyrell correctly said, those commissions would then go to the facility manager. So we're not at this point in time recommending any action to turn it down. We're just trying to gain the information we believe we need to bring it before the committee to give you guys as much information as possible to make an informed decision to guide us on it. Because we want it to be viable as much as I know all of you want it to be viable.
Correct. Yeah, that's exactly it. So, you know, and again, just one more time, to rest assured that, you know, any opportunity going forward, you know, we're going to try to maximize gathering all of the information to make or to allow the committee to make a well-rounded decision for the opportunities going forward. So,
That was my next question, Tyrell, is that we're not looking for any action today. We're just kind of just laying out what we know so far, and we'll continue to move forward with the gathering of the information. Gotcha. Okay.
Correct. Yeah, because they reached out to Brian and I early on, in which we, you know, we had anticipated having enough information at this meeting for a committee vote. However, after multiple attempts of trying to retrieve it, and then finding out that they just weren't prepared to provide that, you know, I left it on
agenda, but we'll definitely have to push it along to the next one, unless they provide the information between now and our next meeting requiring a vote.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, moving 1,786 operators within the Randolph Shepherd program, ultimately allotting an individual amount of $11,198.21, I believe, which equates to a pre-approved amount for our state of $313,550 when you divide that by 28 operators. You know, the purpose of today's discussion is just that, I believe. It's to kind of establish a basis in which the committee and the administration can find, you know, a mutual agreement on the distribution of funds to the operators. You know, hopefully today's meeting will allow for our agency to then forward those recommendations back to RSA for approval. Brian, I don't know if I missed anything in regards to this that you may want to add in before I forward this or turn this over to Chairman Haley for discussion.
Sure. Yeah, I'd like to just bring up a couple points. Rehab Services Administration has not yet issued the frequently asked questions guidance that we all need and you all need to get into the intricacies of what gets counted and what doesn't get counted, how to go about apportioning it. Some of you were on a call that Katrina McDonald organized where she made it very clear that the 11,000 figure that Tyrell referenced was not a figure that says every operator is getting that dollar amount. It is what was used as somewhat of a basis that he indicated for calculating how much each state was getting. So how that money then gets apportioned for each individual operator is something that the committee has to have active involvement in so that we can then put forth to Rehab Services Administration your recommendation. But there are some things that we don't yet today have answers to. So, as an example, we do not yet know when they say, which is right in the stimulus bill, that we can cover costs that weren't otherwise reimbursed to the operator. So there are things that we don't know how we get that information, for instance, because there may be funds you all got to offset some of your losses, and we don't necessarily know that you've got those funds. So we need RSA to tell us all. So how do we go about determining losses that weren't otherwise offset? The other thing, we don't know what period of time is being referenced. For instance, is it based on the tax year? So we look at Schedule C's and compare them. Do we compare the 2020 calendar year Schedule C to the 2019 Schedule C? Do we pick some other time period? COVID pretty well had its onset in full force last March. So do we go March to the end of February, or like March of 20 to February 21, and compare that to March of 19 to February of 20? I mean, these are things that we don't necessarily have answers that we can give. The other thing we don't necessarily know is whether or not there is any kind of decision at the federal level as the maximum amount that any one individual should receive or not receive. So these are all the things that the committee has to deliberate on so that we at least know the answers to some of these basic questions now. So I guess the question number one is, once we get the guidance that this is how you calculate losses that were not otherwise offset, whatever that means, and we will have to wait for RSA to help us understand what that means, do you then want to see that every operator gets up to a certain amount and that's it? Or was an operator with a larger location has sustained a heavier loss, do you want to give that person the full amount? And then what would happen if you had run out? $313,000
$550 may not go far if you've got four operators with large locations that each lost, let's say, $50,000 or more because there was a large location. It was, in essence, shut down, and they got very little to offset it. You may not have enough to then distribute among all the operators. So then you may have to discuss, do you want to prorate it in that thing? Everybody gets like 80% on the dollar. Or you could say that everybody will get 100% up to this amount, and then whatever's left would be prorated. But these are the kinds of decisions that you need to make in addition to what do you want the period of time to be based upon, and what do you want to compare it to help us determine what your actual losses were, and before we even look at what offsets you may have gotten during that time period to offset those losses. So, Mr. Chairman, these are open-ended questions that I've kind of put out there, and I'll turn it over to you.
Sure, and a couple things that I've learned along the way through other discussions and calls that I've listened in on or trainings they've had along the way. And it's unfortunate because it's true, we're waiting for this guidance, and they're urging states to have these conversations and the committees and the SLAs, and without having a lot of these answers that Brian just kind of said, it's kind of tough to make a decision because we don't, we could do a lot of work and say, okay, this is how we want to do it, and then the guidance comes out and says, well, you can't use the money for that. It's got to go towards this. But I guess it's, to start getting a feel for how we would like to see it go is a start. My understanding was it's only for losses in 2020, so I don't think you could bring it into current, February 2021. They were hoping these funds were going to be distributed in 2020. We thought we were going to get them in, say, September, not having it dragged out as long as it did. So, and I would, again, these are my thoughts, but I would, you look at 2019, what you made in 2019, and then compare it to what you made in 2020. What Brian was saying about things being offset. Now, some of us received unemployment. I don't know if people went after the PPP loans, but if you were compensated, say you had a place that you made $30,000, and yeah, you lost half of that, just say you lost 15. And then you got, $10,000 in unemployment. Well, now you're up to 25. You're not going to get $11,000 because if we gave you $11,000, you were going to make more than what you did. It's not made to make you necessarily whole or above. It's to cut. So then the thing is maybe it's a percentage of what your losses actually were. So yeah, the little guy isn't going to get a bigger chunk of the change than some of the bigger locations were because the loss wasn't as severe. So that $11,000, just so people know, that's just the national, when you take the operators, you take the $20 million, you cut it up, it comes out to $11,000. The national people, including Terry Smith, get that number out of your head, because that doesn't mean everyone's getting $11,000. Someone might get a little more, someone might get a little less. It all depends on what your losses actually are. Then they say also that, if you take your guy, well, I already said the unemployment, PPP would be another thing that they're wondering. It's that factored in because you can't, it's kind of like double dipping. You can't get all this, assistance throughout the year and then, now this money's available and you're going to go get above and beyond. So now you're looking better than you did in 2019. That's not the intent of this. This is to shore up people for their losses. And then they also say, and again, we haven't had the guidance, but they're saying if things were covered under something else similar to unemployment, but how about inventory? There was some talk before this $20 million came up that possibly there would be some folk rehab funds to help us with our inventory once we open back up. Okay, well, if our inventory is going to be covered somewhere else, it shouldn't go against this $20 million, I'll say 20 as a whole. And then there's potential legislation that they're talking about that also might cover your inventory losses or restaurants, which we will be covered under that. So, I'd hate to say, oh, well, you have to use this money for your inventory loss and then all of a sudden get reimbursed somewhere else. I would like to see the inventory get reimbursed somewhere else. And then we get this on top of it because that's really where, the operator, we all know, we're hurting on the payroll side of things. We all took a huge hit, regardless of inventory or anything else. We're not getting our pockets padded very much, you know, maybe so with the unemployment. But these are a lot of questions that we can have the discussions, but until we get this final guidance, these are only suggestions. We can't really move too far ahead without the guidance that we're waiting for. So if anyone else on the committee has any ideas or thoughts or questions, I guess me and Brian can answer them the best we can, but we only know what we know at this time. But this is the time to voice your opinion.
Let me ask you a question. This is Carmella. I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I heard that the unemployment had nothing to do with business figures, because unemployment is for everybody personal. It's got nothing to do with it as a business. That's something that we pay our own individual taxes on. So any other, like some people got that $5,000, which went to the business. I'm not sure if I understood correctly when I was, you know, talking to other people, but I do believe that the unemployment cannot be counted along with the PPP.
Well, that's what we're waiting to find out. We don't know that yet. That's the unanswered question. If the guidance comes out and says it is, we can't fight that. This is coming from the federal government. So if they say that you have to, you know, add in your unemployment and PPP, then we have to add it in. We don't know if they're going to cover that or not. Those are the questions. That's why I was hoping, I'm sure Brian was, hoping we were going to get the guidance was going to come out before this meeting so we could have a more, a better discussion on how we're going to disperse this money. So that's an unanswered question. So it's a valid point.
I'm not sure. Like I said, I was talking to other people, but that money, that $20 million that's coming, is for loss of business. It doesn't mean it's just to cover the payroll. Like, the payroll is only a portion of your business. Everybody lost. $11,000 is nothing to anybody, really. We're all in business. You make more than that in a year, and we all lost, and none of us are still even open.
Well, the terminology they were using is if you, you know, the money is too...